from 90.7 WFAE, this is Newsworthy for Friday, December 12, 2025. I'm Eric Thiel. After a trial lasting nearly 2 weeks, NASCAR Cup Series teams 2311 Racing and Front Row Motorsports have agreed to settle an antitrust lawsuit against NASCAR. Kenneth Lee has more.
Court was dismissed Thursday morning in Uptown Charlotte after the teams reached a deal at the federal courthouse. The settlement ends a year-long legal battle between the stock car sanctioning body and the two teams. NASCAR said in a statement that one of the conditions of the settlement is that the sanctioning body will issue an amendment to include a form of evergreen charters for all teams. That will allow teams to have permanent race entries and revenue share. Despite the legal battle, 2311 co-owner Michael Jordan said he believed level heads prevailed to reach the agreement.
When you get to the finish line, sometimes you have to think, you know, not just for yourself, but you got to think about the sport as a whole. And I think both parties got to that point, and we realized that we can have an opportunity to settle this, and we dove in and we actually did it. You know, unfortunately, it took us that long, but we got here. That's all that matters.
That audio was from Fox Sports reporter Bob Pockris. NASCAR officials said in a statement that the financial terms of the settlement will not be released. Kenneth Lee, WFAE News.
The co-owner of Sycamore Brewing was arrested early Thursday on multiple felony charges, including statutory rape of a child, first-degree burglary, and indecent liberties with a child. Court documents allege 44-year-old Justin Brigham broke into a home in Stanfield Wednesday and sexually assaulted a girl under the age of 15. He's being held in the Stanley County Jail on a $10 million bond. In a statement, Sycamore Brewing says Brigham is divesting from the company and will no longer be involved. His wife and co-owner Sarah Taylor says she's assuming full leadership of the brewery and is, quote, devastated by the charges. The 33-year-old Honduran man accused of stabbing a fellow light rail passenger on the Lynx Blue Line last week is now facing federal charges. Julian Berger has more.
The U.S. Attorney's Office announced Thursday that Oscar Solorzano Garcia is charged with committing violence on a mass transportation system and re-entering the country after deportation. He's accused of stabbing Kenyon Dobie, who has serious chest injuries. Solorzano Garcia is an undocumented immigrant from Honduras who has been deported twice before. But U.S. Attorney Russ Ferguson said last month's immigration enforcement crackdown missed him.
There's no record of these people coming into the United States or being in the United States or where they are in the United States. And they didn't get Mr. Solorzano Garcia, but I certainly wish that they had.
If convicted, Solorzano Garcia faces life in federal prison. He is also facing state charges, including attempted first-degree murder. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
A report from the watchdog group Environmental Integrity Project found that the North Carolina agency responsible for protecting the environment has shrunk rapidly over the past 15 years. The North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality, or DEQ, lost the highest percentage of staff positions of any state environmental agency in the U.S. DEQ lost nearly a third of its staff, 386 jobs, from 2010 to 2024. The agency also lost a similar percentage of funding. The report concluded that the cuts leave North Carolina, quote, ill-positioned to regulate factory farming or respond to the threat of climate-driven storms and flooding. South Piedmont Community College is the latest community college to formalize its participation in Wolfpack Connect, a new program that offers guaranteed admissions to NC State University for community college students. James Farrell has more.
The partnership with NC State is available to all North Carolina community colleges. South Piedmont welcomed NC State officials to its Monroe campus on Thursday to formally sign on. Starting in 2026, South Piedmont and other community college students throughout the state who earn associates in arts or science degrees will receive guaranteed admission to NC State to complete their bachelor's degrees. Here's NC State Senior Provost for Enrollment, Don Hunt.
Students don't have to guess. They have the pathway, they have the information, they have the tools. Now they just need to perform. And if they do what we are asking them to do, they have a clear, guaranteed pathway to NC State where they can continue and thrive.
Hunt says NC State gets about 50,000 applications per year for its first-year program, but only about 2,500 applications from the state's community college system. He said NC State hopes the program could boost that number as high as 20,000. Eligibility opens in January for a fall 2026 start. James Farrell, WFAE News.
The holidays are fast approaching, and experts advise being on the lookout for circulating viruses and bacterial infections. In particular, the flu has come early and will likely stick around. WHQR's Rachel Keith has this report.
A new flu subvariant is circulating, but physicians say that doesn't mean this year's vaccine is ineffective. It's not so different from strains in prior years. Duke University professor Dr. Cameron Wolf is an infectious diseases specialist with expertise in respiratory viruses. He says the best way to avoid being hospitalized is to get your annual flu vaccine.
Your likelihood of getting a severe case, even if you get a case of the flu, is so much less. We look through our ICU cases of influenza, and they're almost universally unvaccinated individuals.
Getting the vaccine is one of those precautions to take ahead of upcoming travel and visits with family and friends, which are likely to be indoors. Wolf also reminds the public to practice good hand washing and avoid contact with others when sick. If you can avoid others, then masking is another way to prevent transmission. Rachel Keith, WHQR News.
This week, more than 20 neighborhood and community leaders asked the North Carolina Department of Transportation not to widen Interstate 77 from Uptown to the South Carolina line. They also want the state to consider moving part of the existing highway below ground and placing a concrete cap over it. That would better connect the west side to Uptown. As Steve Harrison reports, one way to pay for the cap would be money from the recently passed transportation sales tax.
Shauna Bell lives in a house on Van Buren Avenue in McCrory Heights. A steep berm rises just a few yards from her front lawn. And on top of that is a ramp from I-77 to the Brookshire Freeway. The ramp has been there for decades, long before she bought her house. But under one of the NCDOT's plans for new express toll lanes on I-77, a new ramp would be built where her house is today.
I don't know if it's that ramp or if it's an additional ramp that comes. I don't know which one. But either way, something comes right here.
And when you say right here, you mean?
Through where we're sitting in my living room. Yes.
When I-77 was first built more than 50 years ago, the highway became a huge physical barrier between the neighborhood and uptown, separating them with a canyon of concrete and a river of traffic. Bell says the state's plan to build four new express toll lanes on I-77 is more of the same.
We have come together to say that anything that displaces anyone in the neighborhood, we are just not okay with it. The neighborhood has been displaced before.
Bell and others want the DOT to consider rebuilding part of I-77 near Uptown below grade and then placing a concrete cap over the highway. A park and other recreational amenities could be built on top. It's not a new concept. Boston rebuilt I-93 underground with the Big Dig in the 1990s, and Seattle also buried a highway. In Austin, Texas, the state plans to cap and stitch I-35 to reconnect downtown with Eastside neighborhoods. The city and the University of Texas are spending $470 million on the concrete caps.
So you still get your lanes, it goes underground, it doesn't disrupt anybody. Then when it's all done, then it's hidden and it doesn't impact any of the neighborhoods.
But the DOT appears lukewarm to the idea. In a statement to WFAE, the state said that the existing I-77 toll lane project is North Carolina's most expensive at $3.2 billion for 11 miles. The DOT added that any substantial cost increase could make the project infeasible for the private developer who will be hired to build and manage it. In theory, Charlotte could help pay to lower I-77 and cap it with money from the new transportation sales tax approved by voters last month. 40% of the new sales tax money, roughly $8 billion over 30 years, is set aside for roads. Here's Sean Langley, president of the McCrory Heights Neighborhood Association.
City Council could look towards other cities to see what they've done. So yeah, tapping into that money is a great idea.
At a recent meeting of the Charlotte Regional Transportation Planning Organization, Langley and others spoke out against the current plan. Mecklenburg Commissioner Lee Altman said the residents are being heard.
We will stay engaged We will watch the process closely, and we will continue to advocate to ensure that every need, every concern, and every voice is addressed.
WFAE asked Altman whether the city of Charlotte should consider using money from the sales tax to cap and cover the highway. She responded by saying that she's asked DOT to address some of the ideas in the community for feasibility. WFAE asked again whether some of the transportation sales tax money should be used for the project. Altman didn't respond. Langley said he's worried that elected officials are talking about helping them, but aren't willing to do what's necessary.
I was at a city council meeting Monday before Thanksgiving. I couldn't count how many times they mentioned equity in the work that they do. County commission, same thing. This is city council and county commission's time where they actually could step up and match their what they say with their words with their actions.
Charlotte City Council member Malcolm Graham said he's opposed to both of the DOT's proposals for I-77. But when asked about spending money from the sales tax to help pay for cap and cover,
the short answer is no. We've made a commitment to the community that road monies would be funding the strategic area plans that we've adopted as a council. That money is somewhat already spoken for.
Langley said he wants elected officials to force the DOT to come up with a better plan.
And I frankly would like to see city council come out and have a stronger position on it versus just say we want to minimize impact on black and brown communities. Like that to me is that's not enough.
I-77 is expected to be discussed more next month. Steve Harrison, WFAE News.
Volunteers donate their time in communities across our region, whether at a homeless shelter, food bank, or an after-school program. 86-year-old Charlotte resident Connie Oliphant was one of those people. Just over half of Americans lack basic swimming skills, according to an American Red Cross survey, and over the past 4 years, the retired teacher worked to help change that. Over the past few weeks, Elvis Meneyese spent time with Oliphant, seeing how she gave adults life-saving skills and confidence in the water, before she died unexpectedly last weekend. He has this tribute story.
A group of four adult swimmers gathered one recent evening by the edge of the pool with Connie Oliphant at West Charlotte High School.
Listen up, you're gonna do 4x25, free swim, push off, dolphin swim. Y'all remember dolphin swim? Our legs together.
One after another, the swimmers step up and dive into the deep end.
Okay, go ahead. You can get in. Yeah, two over there. Mm-hmm.
Oliphant is a volunteer at Evolutionary Aquatics, a black-led swim club that helps adults build confidence in the water. Oliphant has been coaching here over the past 4 years.
It gives me a purpose for living. Also, it gives me a reason to maintain and share my skills with others.
Backstroke, freestyle, and treading water are skills swimmers learn and improve with Oliphant. The same skills the Red Cross says people need to perform to be considered competent in the water.
It makes me feel like I'm worthy. I have been able to do something for someone, to teach someone something that they wanted.
Oliphant learned to swim at the age of 12. It was during the Jim Crow era when pools were segregated and access for black families was severely limited. North Carolina didn't open its first integrated public pool, the Revolution Swimming Pool, in Charlotte until the 1960s. That's when swimmers like Oliphant could finally dive in. Helping swimmers refine their side stroke is Alicia King.
While you're doing it though, assess what you're doing. Think about what you're doing. That way you know what feels good and what feels wrong.
King is the assistant director at the swim club. She says Oliphant is proof that it's never too late to follow your passion.
It doesn't matter your age when you start, just do it. Connie is a testament of just keep going and doing things that you love.
Getting instructions from Oliphant is Melissa Bullock-Durham.
Just float out on your front, count to four, and then stand up.
The 63-year-old nurse is learning how to tread water.
She was looking at me dead in my eyes. She told me exactly what to do, and She made me feel good. You know, she made me not less fearful.
And how important is that for you to feel good?
Oh my God, it's massive. Yeah, because I do a lot of international travel.
The confidence Bullock Durham gets from her coach is something Oliphant says she feels right back just by showing up to teach.
I had stopped driving at night, but then I drove down tonight and I'm saying, well, that wasn't so bad. But I drive every now and then in the dark. But it just really pushes me to live life.
Oliphant died last weekend at the age of 86. She was still sharing her passion and her skills. On Saturday, a memorial service in Charlotte will give many swimmers and coaches Oliphant trained an opportunity to thank the volunteer who spent her final years providing life-saving coaching. For WFA News, I'm Elvis Meneyese.
And for Friday, December 12th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Thiel.